All right, guys, welcome back to another episode of the Onsite Insight podcast, where we dive into the world of construction. I'm your host, Corey Tompkins, and today we've got a very special guest, Oliver Lindemann. Correct me if I'm wrong, I'm saying that.
Lindemann, yeah.
Lindemann?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, thank you for joining. He's from Albrock Projects.
Yep.
So yeah, Oliver, thank you for joining today. I know, you know, everyone's got a very busy schedule and, you know, I just want to, say thank you for coming on today. So to start us off, are you able just to, give our listeners a little bit of context about you, what you guys do, your brand, your personal journey and, you know, and how you got to where you are today, and then we'll wind the clock back and, you know, pull back the layers a little bit.
Okay. We're a Brisbane-based residential renovation company. We started out in 2017, so what's that, 6-7 years now. We've got a pretty small team, you know, 5-6 guys, and we just, mainly do residential renovations. We've done a couple of new builds.
Yeah.
But, my business partner and I, Brock, we tried out for The Block back in 2014.
Oh, yeah.
And I was a fridgie back then.
Yep.
We were renovating my place.
How'd that go? Did you have to do the full interview video and went through the whole thing? Yeah. Did you go through stages or anything?
Yeah. So we had to put the video together.
Yeah.
Which that's a lot of work in itself.
Yeah.
Fortunately, we were renovating my place at the time. So we were able to sort of content create, essentially.
I've been told that people have done that year on year on year, for The Block, like just
couldn't
create.
Do it. Yeah. I couldn't do it year on year. It was just so involved to get there. And then, we were shortlisted, went into a hotel in the city and met the casting director.
That's exciting, yep.
Had an interview, but we didn't make it. Mm-hmm. And I think that was one of the years that they didn't actually make any money on the show.
So you dodged a bullet.
So I kind of dodged a bullet there. But what came of that was Albrock Projects.
Yeah.
People came to us after and said, you know, you guys should think about going into business together. Mm-hmm. You'd make a good team. And, 3-4 years later, we started.
Yeah.
We were doing weekend work. We both went into an ANZ one afternoon and put $500 in a bank account, a joint bank account.
Yeah.
And we just started from there.
Yeah.
And we were doing balustrade repairs and stair maintenance and building repairs.
Yeah.
And then it just slowly grew from there.
Yeah. So this was how long ago again?
This was in 2000. We were actually working in 2016 and then registered everything in 17.
Okay.
And then went from there.
So about 7-8 years ago or something like that, you guys were initially just sort of kicking around. And
five, six, 7 years. But prior to that, I was doing refrigeration.
Yeah.
And I had quite a high paying like management role, with an industrial refrigeration company.
Okay.
And I just chucked it all in and started an apprenticeship with my now business partner.
Yeah.
So
the apprenticeship was. So you were working as a manager for that refrigeration company, but you were trade, like you already.
I was a fully qualified refrigeration mechanic.
But then what was the apprenticeship that you did?
I did it with Brock.
Yeah.
So I was a business owner / apprentice.
Yeah.
Just straight off the bat.
Yeah. In carpentry.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Fully changed. I just turned 30.
Because I was working. I was like, wait, did you do your refrigeration apprenticeship with Brock? All right, so you were already qualified, already a managerial role. You fucking went through that whole process in order to get there. Really good paying job. And then you just...
Yep. I'd been doing it for 15 odd years, 16 years. And I just... I graduated from school. I went to schoolies.
Yeah.
And I started my apprenticeship on the Monday. Yeah. And I'd been doing it for 15 years. And then we renovated my place and I just loved it so much.
Yeah.
That I actually, just... essentially chucked it in and started again.
So throughout that whole apprenticeship period, you guys were pretty much just, balustrade, like decks.
Yeah, decks, carports.
Started from the start.
We got into some small extensions and things like that. But one of the challenges with doing that is that I didn't have any connections. You know, I didn't know architects. I didn't know how a building company was run. Yeah. I just had some experience running or helping run a refrigeration company, right? So just jumped straight in and then had to develop our processes, the way that we did things. I had to do that. Mm-hmm. I've just made it up.
Yeah.
What I thought the client would want.
Yeah.
I didn't have connections in design, architecture, other building owners, you know, building company owners, had nothing.
Yeah, it's funny you say that because we get so many people that, you know, contact us and they say like, you know, how do I get those jobs? How do you, and then my answer to them is always like, there really isn't an answer. Everyone runs their own path. Like you can obviously, I'll contextualize it. If you're just kicking around doing balustrades and decks and whatnot, you're not going to go to the Joe Adsets of the world, the high-end architects, and say, hey, listen, I can build your house. You have to go, like as you sort of were just blurbing out then, you have to do the small things, do some extensions, reach out to some clients, do the jobs for the clients first, then create the relationship with the architects, and it's a full thing. So
it's taken till now to even start to build relationships with architects because, as you know, like you have to go and sell yourself, right? Yep. Like your trade's one thing. That's great. You can be a great carpenter. Yep. If you can't go and sell yourself and you can't put yourself out into the world and network and things, then you're only as good as your last job.
Yeah.
If you want to do big extensions that are worth, geez, now a buy-in's like $1 million, right? Yeah. If you want to do that kind of stuff, you need to get someone, you know, find someone that's willing to give you the opportunity.
Yeah.
And usually that's by lowering your value or your worth.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's what you do. Yeah. You lower your value and your worth to try and win stuff, to convince or to, not to convince, but to show people like, look what we can do. We can actually do this.
Yeah.
And people go, oh, okay, I'll give you that. I'll give you that.
Yeah.
That's a hard slog. And the crap thing about that is when you first start your business, you rely on your 6 degrees of separation, right, to generate work. Especially in our situation where I didn't have contacts. We didn't know people. We just started putting things on socials, personal. Yeah. And people would, you know, friend of a friend, you know, next door neighbor's dog wanted something done. You know, like you have to use your 6 degrees to get started. But what happens there is people think, oh, well, because you know me somewhat far removed, you're going to look after me.
Yeah.
And then you feel obliged to. You lower your value. You lower your worth.
Yeah.
And that takes time. It's one of the things that we all should be putting at the top.
Yeah.
When we're running our business is our value and our worth, but we put it at the bottom to get going. And then over time, we slowly move it up the list to the top.
Yeah.
And then, you know, people are happy to say, well, that's my price.
Yeah.
It takes a while to get there.
Oh, man, we could sit here for 20 hours and talk about it. Like it's a common denominator that I find across all builders, contractors and, you know, all that alike. It literally does take time. You're doing, as you just said, you're doing jobs for family and friends, and then this person knows you, and then this person knows you, but it's still not the avenue that you want to go. You're thinking of scaling. How do you get to do those $1.5 million projects? You know, do you lower your price? Do you follow the carrot? And every single builder can say what they want out there, but every single builder has at one point underpriced a job just to win it because it's aligned with how they want to run their business. Yeah. You know, I've literally, for me personally, that has been probably something that I, you know, had done numerous times over and over. I was young. We were getting started, as you just said. There was, you know, a really pretty looking job, really good architect. They say this price, you do it. You think, oh, this is mad. It says on the docket that I'm going to make X, and you never make X. There's always overruns, and normally it's labor. But, you know, it happens every single day. And I just feel like over time, as you mature, as you mature as a business owner and you mature in as a builder, you learn not to. It's funny because you learn not to chase those golden nuggets, but yet other ones just appear. It's
the thing with those is you really need to understand your costs and things and how to even do them.
Yeah.
Like as much as you'd love to do that sort of stuff, and I'd get frustrated. I'd think, I wish we were further down the road. I wish we were. Yeah. We were doing more of this kind of stuff. And,
yeah.
And then something would happen or a lesson would be learned. And I would sit there and reflect and think, okay, I needed to learn that lesson to get to where I'm going.
Yeah.
So sometimes the slow burn is the better way because once you've arrived there, you stay there.
Yeah.
You're not over-promising and under-delivering. You've built systems and things in the background to back all of that up.
Yeah.
It's just like you said, it's really hard to get that first bite of the cherry. Once you've got it and you can showcase that and sell that, then you know, momentum is everything, right?
Yeah.
Momentum is everything in construction. So you have to keep rolling with it
yeah.
to keep it going. The moment you stop and sit back and think, oh, I've made it, this or this is where we want to be, yeah. it can just get taken away.
Yeah, like this is literally something that me and Nick were talking about off camera the other day about brand. And it rolls across every single little aspect. Doesn't matter if you're a builder, if you're, you know. At the end of the day, if you really look at it from afar, a builder's a builder and, you know, a clothing brand is a clothing brand.
It's all business mechanics.
You know, tomato, tomato, it's the same, same.
Yeah.
Why would you pick one over the other? It just comes down to brand. It just comes down to, you know, who do you entrust more? Who, you know, for us anyway, like some, like we get people that come to us that just, they don't even know anything about me, nothing. They don't know my story, they don't know my life or anything, but they feel already, they already feel some sort of connection with me yeah. through socials or what we've done with brand. And, you know, that's already, I'm already halfway there. I don't need to sell myself.
Well, that's super important too, because you want your social media and your videos and things to translate so that when people reach out to you, they feel like they already know you.
Yeah.
They feel like they can already relate to you.
Yeah.
And you haven't even had an initial conversation with them.
Yeah.
You know, like I was saying before, that's the hard part about what we do. We do our trade and we learn our craft, and then all of a sudden we go and run a business. It's like they're not even the same thing.
No.
You know, you have to go and sell. You have to become a salesman.
Yeah.
You have to like build trust and build rapport
yeah.
and then back it up with the work. And,
yeah.
and you know, someone said to me recently, I said, there's two sides to what we're doing. There's the work and then there's the sell.
Yeah.
And he said, well, at least you've got the work, the hard part right, the work.
Yeah.
The sell is the easy part.
Yeah.
You can go out and sell yourself. You can pay a marketing company to make you look amazing.
Yeah.
But if you can't back it up with the work,
yeah.
your success is only going to last so long.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. It has to almost go hand in hand all the time. And I think like for us personally, that's something, yeah, I even say to the guys that we've got, because we've got obviously leading hands, we've got a guy stepping up as operations manager. And I just say to him, with each level of management, whether you're a leading hand carpenter, you're an operations manager, you're an estimator, each level, it almost gets further and further away from how good you can physically do your job on site to how good you can sell yourself and how good you can be people. You know, for me today, literally, I was just on the phone, just not sales, but I was in that thing. I was answering calls of just, you know, literally I would speak to someone for 20 minutes just in regard like their kids.
Yeah.
It's just one of those things. It's like it's all about relationship building at the end of the day.
And those people are the coalface of your business. Like they represent the brand. They represent the brand that Brock and I started when we were doing balustrade repairs.
Yeah.
And if they can't get on board with that and represent the brand accordingly, like that can hurt you big time.
Oh, massive. Like
big time.
We went through a massive company shift. I think we ended up getting rid of about 5 people and then re-employed. So it was like a massive shift. We got rid of heaps of people and now we're rock solid. Like our ground team is amazing. Everyone loves it. Everyone's good. But that has just taken time. It's literally just taken time and energy.
I think that's the benefit of our business relationship is that I'm more that, you know, running the company, building the brand, marketing, you know, estimating contracts, proposals.
Yeah.
And Brock makes sure that the work is done to the level
that you guys need to be. Yeah.
So we often joke or reflect, if we were doing this on our own, we would struggle.
Yeah.
We would struggle because there's the best part about what we've got is he's looking at one side of the business and I'm looking at the other side of the business.
Yeah.
And I respect and trust him wholeheartedly, and I'd like to believe, he feels the same. So we don't butt heads because I'm looking at how to grow our presence, building relationships with architects and clients, and ongoing relationships, and then he's ensuring that communication and the work and everything that we do on site backs that up and backs up the brand.
Yeah, and it goes hand in hand. Like we've only. You know, you literally do go down the path. You got sales, that's one aspect. Sales brand, that's one aspect. And then on the other hand, you got, you know, operations and, you know, all that side of it. So for me, I'm lucky enough that I've got guys in and around me that are good at what they do and they're willing to invest in the brand and they're willing to stay around.
Because you're only as good as the people above you and below you, right?
Oh,
so if you've got no one good below you, you can't. There's no point.
Yeah, we literally did a video about this the other day. But yeah, like no one's self-made. It all just comes down to your team. But anyway, we'll keep going on.
Yep.
So talk to me about, so obviously wind the clock back a little bit, you and Brock, you know, you guys, as you said, you went into an ANZ and, you know, you were doing balance trades and doing decks. But at what point in time, was there any like keystone, like cornerstone moments for you guys? Like at what point in time did you guys think, like, let's actually give this a crack. Let's give this a shot. Was it just organic? Did you just close your eyes and it just started to happen? Or was, were you both, because...
It was never really organic. Yeah. I think that was...
Because surely there was a fork in the road where you guys were like, you know, especially with you, you've just come from a really good paying job. You were already established to the sense, like you could have easily just continued doing what you're doing, go on holidays to Europe and do whatever.
As a guide, I used to get, this was, you know, a few years ago now, but I was getting paid about 120 to 130 a year.
Yeah.
And in the first year of Albrock Projects, I paid myself $75,000.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I wanted it more than getting paid that kind of money. So it's only in the last little bit that we now feel like we're actually getting paid as business owners.
Yeah. As everyone does, because to find out, they say the first 5 years you don't make nothing. Yeah.
You're just getting by, building brand, trying to create it. I mean, in terms of fork in the road, there was a few renovations that came about that really made us realize, okay, we need to elevate our game. We need to – I felt like for a few years there we were running – hard out. We were trying to represent more than we were.
Yep.
You know, you're always trying to oversell yourself and all these sorts of things. And it got to a point where we started taking on good work where we were making okay money out of it. Like, and we said, okay, enough of projecting this and being this. Like, let's
level
what
out,
we're projecting is who we are.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And on an identity, and we worked on all those sorts of things.
Yeah.
I
feel like you can go to a degree. Like, you can fake it till you make it to a degree, like everyone sort of has to if you want to go up to a luck. Same as like I'd be lying to everyone if I didn't do the same thing. Fuck, I was, I look young now. Trust me, I was younger. Just imagine me pulling up to a house trying to win a $1.5 million job.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So to a degree, I feel like you can do it, but at the same time, you got to keep it very real and honest.
Otherwise. That's why I grew a beard because it was like, now I like it.
But yeah.
That's why, you know, and I used to overthink the shit out of it. Like I'd think, okay, do I wear jeans? Do I wear a button-up shirt? Do I wear R.M. Williams boots? Oh, no, that seems too much. Do I wear just my work boots? Like I used to overthink the shit out of it because it was like I just want people to believe in us and go, yeah, cool, these are the right guys for the job.
Yeah.
And then it gets to a point where it changes and the value and your worth come up to the top of the list and you go, I'm just going to rock up in
whatever,
my sneakers
whatever you
and
got,
a T-shirt. And that's it.
Yeah.
And because the work and the previous work backs everything up.
Yeah.
I'm not here to necessarily impress you with my appearance.
Yeah.
I'm here to get to know you and hopefully you'll trust that we're the right people for the job.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. And it's so funny because like starting out back in like when I was doing it, man, I'd be high vis during the day and then I'd like strap in the and I literally would do the same thing like
I'd knock off at 2 and then go home and have a shower and do
I'd
my
be
hair
on site. Like I'd be on site like at the customer's house, like in the fucking I'd be like at the hose, like washing my arms and stuff. And then I'd be like, oh, see you. And then I like jump in the get changed. And like, yeah, these are all the things that no one ever really talks about.
As
when you're in the trenches.
As if you're office bound all the time. Like, I'm just on my way home. Yeah.
I'll get the administrator to send it to you. You get home, you're like, hey, babe, are you able to do this? And it's just like, oh, you're doing it yourself. Yeah.
A friend who had a business and he used to send invoices from another email address and gave his office lady a name called Sharon or something.
Yeah,
generic.
I've met a few guys that have done that.
So that it felt like he had depth. That's also going back to what I was saying before is when you try to operate like this, you're trying to level out, it's about building depth in the business. So you have the actual people in your back of house.
Yeah.
You actually have the systems and processes in place.
Yeah.
You have all these things like you're saying, you sort of fake it to a point, not fake it, but you're trying to represent
like
more than what you are.
Yeah.
And then at some point that's how you burn out.
Yeah.
And we were burning out hard. And it was like, we can't maintain this. Like we have to, what we represent is what we actually are.
Yeah.
The old fake email thing. Yeah.
Oh man, I used to work for a guy that had that. And I remember how it clicked one day to me is because I remember saying to him like, oh, can I get her a number or a ring or something? And they're like, nah. Like, and then I had a Christmas party invite. Like I was subbing to him at the time. This was fucking years ago, but he literally just whispered in my ear when we were having, he's like, she's not even real. It's just me. I was like, where is she? She's like, nah. Oh, she's away. I was like, I've never met her. I was like, I've been working.
She sounds hot. I love her.
I've been working for you for like 12 months and like I've never seen her or heard from her, but I get emails from her.
Yeah.
And I was like, the email, and it clicked because one email he sent, he always used to do this like typical thing of like, he used to spell like a certain word a certain way or the way he used to communicate. And I'm like, it's very, very similar to you. But anyway, now a little bit more, you know, about the challenges and stuff that you guys have had. Is there any sort of key challenges that you have had or common things that you find amongst the industry? I feel like for someone like me that's interviewed a lot of builders, that the common thing that I find, and you can correct me if you've had this experience, is especially when you're starting out, is because you are sort of doing stuff for architects and designers or whoever it is, do you tend to find that they underestimate how much that project is actually, you know, here's a set of plans, Oliver. It's a really nice house. We've told, you know, the architect or the client saying that they've got a budget of 600,000, but yeah, you look at it and you're like, that thing's 1.5 mil, like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean that,
yeah.
I think we all face similar challenges.
Yeah.
I think, you know, there was one time I remember we were quoting a house in Graceville.
Mm-hmm.
And the client in a face-to-face on site got angry with me because I couldn't do it for what the designer had told him.
Yeah.
As if this was my problem to bear. And I mean, that's hard because, like we said before, residential, post-tax dollars, mums and dads, it is really hard to justify value,
yeah.
Right? There's that whole value and worth thing
creeping up again
too.
Yeah.
That you know, you're quoting things the best that you can, and I used to struggle with rejection a lot.
Yeah.
That's also something I really struggled with, was like rejection if we didn't win the work and take it personally.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he came and said, this is ridiculous. You're trying to have a lend of me. And it was like, we're absolutely not trying to have a lend of you. Like, we just want the work.
Yeah.
We want the work. We want it in our portfolio. We want to be able to on-sell that again and show people that we're capable and all these things. And it became our problem. And I think that is one of the challenges, is trying to justify value. People engage with designers.
Yeah.
They go on this emotional journey with them,
yeah.
you know, and they get emotionally attached to this design.
Yeah.
And
they can already see it. It's already theirs. They can
reach out and grab it, and all of a sudden it's
you're the one that has to slap it in the face. Yeah.
Well, it weirdly becomes our problem, right?
Yeah.
Like, it becomes our problem. Well, what can I do? What can I do to get what I want for that amount of money?
Mm.
And then, you know, it's only in recent history we kind of have had to say, well, that's a collaborative process. That's not necessarily on us to tear this design apart and try and save costs here, there, and everywhere.
Yeah.
Like, we're here to price what you want.
Yeah.
And so now if we go down that path, we're obviously making sure we're getting paid for that.
Yeah. All right, guys, congratulations. You're halfway through this episode. I hope you guys are really enjoying it. But first, I just want to make a special thank you to Ideal Group Australia. Without them, I wouldn't be able to bring this podcast to you. So special thank you. I hope you guys are enjoying it. Buckle in and get ready to listen to the end of this episode.
And I feel that, like, that's consulting role.
Yeah. And I feel like talking about that model, and like, I speak to a lot of guys that do that now, like when they're established, that's the model that they run now, but they tend to, and all the listeners, it's never like that at the start. When you're starting out, it's a slog. Like, it's not, you know, you don't have these processes and systems in place. You don't charge for quotes because
You just want the opportunity.
But that's what I mean. And that's like, for guys that are listening, they obviously hear all these stuffs about, oh, these guys have got this process in place. They work with designers now. They get to charge for their time. And, you know, it's easy for us now to sit back and say that sort of stuff. But the reality is, it was never the case at the start.
Absolutely not. Yeah. And the thing is too, is that we've all got our own processes that we've all just had to develop.
Yeah.
Like, if somebody came to you and said, can you show me how you operate your business?
Yeah.
You're going to tell them that, sorry, I can't help you.
Yeah.
Because we've all had to learn ourselves. We've all had to make it up. We've all had to work through the knockbacks and the letdowns and go, well, what does, as a client, if I'm spending $1 million, like, what kind of service and what kind of experience would I want from that?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, back in the day it used to be $300,000-$400,000, and I used to say, you're handing over like supercar money.
Yeah.
You went down to Ferrari, and you're buying a $400,000 supercar, like you'd want the best service in town.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So you want to offer the best for everybody, yeah. I guess.
You almost have to look at it from afar and just like picture yourself giving yourself your money and then working out like what would you want?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
So we've all got
how would you want to communicate?
Costing, our costing spreadsheets.
Yeah.
Our, you know, I sat down last year and I can develop, I developed a spreadsheet to understand what it costs per hour to operate.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that we can accurately move forward and quote things.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
This is again, we've moved, this conversation's moved far away from doing your trade, right?
Yeah.
Like, so yeah. We haven't even covered that.
Yeah.
All we're doing is talking about this is how you run a business.
Yeah.
Because you don't learn that in your trade.
Yeah. But that's what I say, like even to the apprentices and stuff, like talking about that is because we employ a lot of young guys, a lot of apprentices. And I say to all of them is in regards to the trade, learning the trade, that'll come. It'll naturally come. You got TAFE, you got whatever, whoever you're going down, you've got that ability to learn your trade. So in regards to knowing how to build a house and that, yeah, some guys do stuff with builders and some guys do stuff with new homes. But in a nutshell, you will learn an aspect of carpentry. Some guys argue that they've learned the best way and then some guys argue that they haven't learned enough. But either way, though, everyone learns their own journey.
Yeah.
So, but the hard part is that, yeah, no one, you can go out there and get an ABN, but no one's going to teach you on how to actually run a business and do all that sort of stuff. So,
and it's a high risk business to run. Really.
One of the most high risk businesses that no one ever talks about. You know what I mean? Tell me another industry where someone's going to give you $1 million and say, yeah, see, yeah, here's your money. Yeah, yeah, no worries. Yeah, again, build me
supercar,
that.
Like you'd be on supercar money. Like,
you know what I mean?
It's wild hectic. To think that you can cash flow and handle that amount of money and deliver projects, especially in architectural space, it's so detailed and, you know, it's such an emotional business too. It's emotionally draining business because when an architect sends me new plans, you almost have to boil a pot of coffee and sit down and just deep dive.
Yeah.
Because the architect and the client have spent the last, I don't know, 12, 24 months emotionally invested in this design and you've got 4 weeks or 3 weeks to tender it and you've got to like deep dive and understand every single element that's required or process that's required to complete that.
Yeah.
Right? You win it. And then you win it. And then you think, whenever we win jobs, I always think, shit. I hope we're good. I hope like I just You think, oh shit, I hope we're good. I hope we're good. You've already won it and you're trolling back through all your costs, like, yep, okay, good there, yep, okay, I'm comfortable.
Yeah.
But you did that before you submitted and you're doing it again.
That's literally what we do. Like when a project goes live and we win it, we nearly rip it fully apart because like you can't, if a client's been working on for 12 to 18 months, there is no way. It doesn't matter if you're Superman, right? Unless you're Hutchies and you've got 3 levels of estimators in the city. But if you're just a one-man guy that's estimating, there is no way in the world you're going to know every fucking little intricate thing of that thing. For the most part, you're probably just going to not punch it out, but you're going to get a grasp of it. You're going to throw a figure on it and you're going to lean on your brand and how you sell. And then when you win it, that's when you go, oh, fuck.
You think, shit.
I got it.
And so
I won it, but fuck have I actually made money on it. Yeah.
Holy crap. Strap in. So then you're on an emotional journey around understanding what's involved and understanding the cost.
Mm.
Then you've got the journey with the client, right? And you've probably found this. The moment they're engaged and they started, it's like this.
Mm.
Come with me. Look. And they're texting you, like you said, late at night. They're ringing. They want to make sure that you understand. Like, are you going to deliver this exactly how I want? Right. So they.
You're married to them for the next 10 years.
By the end of the project, you're just a bit like, you know, you want a 6-week holiday in a European summer.
Yeah.
But you don't because you just go on to the next job.
Yeah.
And they get to take a deep breath once it's all over and go, oh, look at this great house we get to enjoy. Mm. And then you're on to the next. Bang, here we go again.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's emotionally draining. So that's why I think there's, you know, there's other issues with mental health and things like that. And I mean, that's a whole nother thing, but is because it is such an emotionally draining business and a high risk, emotionally draining.
Oh, it's for me anyway, it's got to be up there with one of the most hardest jobs that are out there. And I feel like it is one of the most rewarding.
It is.
But it is one of the most hardest jobs. And, you know, I tell our community the same thing. It's, you know, if you don't do the right things, it will ruin your life. Yeah, faster than you know. And it's because it is such a high risk environment. You got so much money on the line, so many so many people invested in. Like, I still remember, like, the first big contract that I ever did, you know, I think it ended up being on paper about 1.1, and I was emotionally invested, as you do, as you just said, that whole process, right?
You do, you have to be.
Yeah, you do the tender, you pump the tender, you win the project, you meet the client, you meet their kids, you do the job, you like the look of the job, you showcase the job, you feel a particular, you know, part of the job. One of the moments that no one ever warned me about is when that project's done, dusted, and they move in, they shake your hand, you give them the keys, that's it.
They go, all right, we're done here.
It's not yours.
And sometimes some of them unfollow you on socials or something. It's almost like, all right, this business transaction's over. See you, have a great life.
That's what I mean.
Holy crap, we've just been on this 24-month journey of emotional drain.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, we're done here. See you, have a great life.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah. Yeah. So for me, they had like a dinner there that night, and I remember walking up the driveway and that was it. And still to this day, I've never been in that house again after that. Mm. I think we went back there for defects, as you would be well aware of. Yeah. But that was one of those moments where I was like, that was such a good ride, but like, fuck, that's it. These guys get to enjoy it, but I just get all the defect aspect of it. There's for the next 5 years.
I mean, you've probably had projects where you're in it and you're just like, how good's this?
Mm.
You know, they don't come along very often, but every now and again you'll get something and the client's super cool, easy to work with, the scope's really cool, and it just rolls on very seamlessly and easy. And I always say to the boys, when you're in those projects, like, just take it all in.
Yeah.
Like, take it in, because then when you get onto a job that you feel like you're pushing shit uphill, reflect on these ones. Because, again, that emotional journey is just enjoy the good projects and the ones where, you know, you can kick back at the end and just go, like, how good's this?
Oh, yeah, like... Yeah, it's near and far between those the good ones, as we all know. But everyone loves to sit there and say, oh, I've got a process in place of picking and choosing a job. But at the end of the day, the reality is that if you've got a bunch of staff, you don't even the best builders that are in Queensland or in Australia, I guarantee you they're not doing, you know, there are shit jobs that they do. So it's...
But everybody's different. You know, every client's different. That's something that we're moving towards now too, as, you know, we recently rebranded, and part of all of that is to understand the client and, like, profile the client, understand what their objectives are and what they want out of it, and then make sure that we deliver a process that suits that kind of person.
Yeah.
You know, you sort of put yourself out into the world and this is me, and now we've kind of like reverse engineered it a bit and think, well, if people are going to be spending this kind of money, like, what do they want out of this process?
Yeah.
And what do I have to deliver to meet their needs and make sure that they get their outcome that they want from it.
Yeah. You know, and I just want to make a side note too for you guys that are listening, like, just going back to what we were just talking about the pricing and overcoming that that hurdle. What I found worked well for me when I had those conversations with clients, like we were just briefly talking about a few minutes ago, about you know, them saying, oh, this is my budget, and you come over and you feel like, oh, you know, it's my fault. You know, you have that whole mental battle, and then you're revising prices. What I learned really worked for me was, I remember turning to them and saying, what do you want to take out? You know, what do you want to remove out of the scope? Like, do you want to change this door handle? And I remember there was a particular client of mine that, you know, it was a fairly large project. It was about 900,000. And I remember every time they'd come back to me about, oh, the pricing was too high, I knew they wanted to go with us, and I could have stamped my feet in the ground, but they were adamant that they needed to adjust the pricing. And I remember just constantly going back and saying, oh, we can do a price revision. Do you want to remove this? Do you want to remove that? And I remember him sitting down with me and him saying, we don't want to remove anything.
Yeah.
And I remember saying to him, well, unfortunately, the price is what it is. I can't, like, unless we were moving things. And then that was literally the pivotal moment in the road. And I remember him just looking at me, and he knew that I knew that all he wanted to do was crunch me down on price, but keep everything. It's like buying a Lambo, but I've only got a budget of 100,000. That's what it was like. And I remember him looking at me, I'm looking at him, and he looked at his wife, and he said, he played hardball. He shook my hand. He said, thanks very much. We'll be in contact. And 3 days later, he rang me and said, yeah, we're good to go.
I've had that so many times.
I still didn't make enough.
Yeah. They almost want to just test it to make sure that you're doing everything you can for them.
Yeah.
A couple of years ago, I quoted up a house, and it was like a little internal remodel. And it was about, I think it was about 200K. Anyway, I sent over the price and, you know, the husband rings me and he says, oh, you know, it's probably a bit over. You know, what can we get for 200? And I said, well, you're not going to get what you want for 200. Mm-hmm. I said, you can take stuff out of it. So maybe go away and have a conversation with your wife and let me know what part of this you want to take out. Again, putting the onus back on the client to make that call. He rang me 10 minutes later and said, oh, no, we should be right. We're good to go. And I thought, are you just testing me? Like, yeah.
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 Isn't it funny how just like one little like 5-minute phone call, 50,000.
But that again, comes back to value and worth. Yeah. I stood my ground and went, well, it is what it is basically in a really polite way. It is what it is. The ball's in your court. And I think sometimes you just have to do that. People try it on you all the time and you just have to say, sorry, like it is what it is. I've done everything I can. Decisions with you.
Yeah. Yeah, no, for sure. So keeping on, we'll keep moving through these because I've got a few more.
Yeah.
So obviously, yes, we haven't really touched on, you know, your whole apprenticeship and the tradesman. You know, I'm sure there's a massive story for that whole journey. But obviously you briefly touched on like a branding shift about, you know, obviously, you know, I'm assuming that the way that you guys look now wasn't the way that you guys looked, you know, 5 years ago or 4 years ago when you started out. Like, what was that for the guys that are listening anyway? Like, what was that sort of, did you guys sit down and sort of go like these, because you could have taken any aspect. You could have been, you know, do you want to be architectural builders? Did you want to specialize in decks and pergolas? Did you want to specialize in bathrooms? Yeah, obviously, there's plays like a part in it where you're like, oh no, obviously we want to go architectural because we like the look of it. But how did you come up with that whole brand? You know, is that something you and Brock sort of thought about for a while, or did you just go, nah, this is what we want to do? And
we were we had a bit of a tough year last year, and we sort of reflected on that, and I thought,
tough year as in personally or business wise or
personally 2022 was a write off for me, but that's okay.
Yeah.
But 2023 was tough.
Yeah.
From just the workflow and the profit and everything.
Yeah.
We were finishing jobs and we had a few experiences where we got to the end of the job and felt like the client was a bit like, oh, this has actually turned out really good. I'd stop and think, well, what part of this process or what part of us or the brand or the business has made you think that this was going to be anything but?
Mm.
And I think that, you know, Brock and I had conversations and that was the moment where it happened twice, the second time. Mm-hmm. And I just thought, okay, we need to change. There's obviously something about what we're projecting or our look or our vibe that is not resonating, you know, and you might've had it too. I'm sure you have, where people have given you jobs as if like, look at this opportunity that I'm giving you.
Mm.
It's like, sorry, what?
Oh, yeah.
What do you mean?
Oh, I get that.
You should be so grateful that I've given you this project.
Like, I get them on the daily. On
And it was like, they're doing you a favor.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sick of that narrative. And so the rebrand was just about sitting in the marketplace where we wanted to be. And
yeah,
it's funny, you know, you mentioned the different sort of sectors. There's lots of different sectors. Mm. And we were comfortable for a few years there sitting just underneath the architecturals, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
We felt like everybody was battling it out for them, slim margins because they wanted it on their portfolio and all these things.
They wanted the video and the
content, and they were trying to be like some of, you know, Brisbane's biggest builders and all trying to emulate that. And we were happy to sit in with the mums and dads that were just sort of happy to get an extension or create space for their growing family and things like that where they weren't so thingy about the detailing and things like that. Not because we couldn't deliver it, but because they were very like at the time, very in and out type projects.
Mm.
12 weeks, 16 weeks, you could do an extension in and out onto the next.
Yeah.
You know, some of those houses, those large architectural homes take some of them over 12 months, right? And you've got to carry those costs.
Oh, we got builders, like we contracted builders that some of those projects, they run for like 24 months.
Yeah.
And it's like, there is such a long time between drinks, and like the margins start off good, but they dwindle down. And it's like, yes, it is literally only a portfolio aspect where if you're doing those little extensions that are that 250, 450, 600 figure,
yeah,
they're in and out. There's a lot more down. There's a lot more upside, sorry, than there is downside in those. Like,
so we were happy to sit back and essentially take the crumbs, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
Especially for a new business, is take the crumbs and do those jobs and move on to the next. But yeah, it's sort of evolved. We've kind of pushed it in the architectural direction a little bit.
Yeah.
But it's just evolved on its own.
Yeah.
We're happy to do the architecturals. We're happy to do mum and dad extensions. Yeah. We're happy to do kitchens and bathrooms and bits and pieces.
Yeah.
You know, our big thing is that we chase calendar efficiency. And I remember I could have written it on a whiteboard in our office in the first couple of years, was billable hours.
Yeah.
The two of us, billable hours.
Yeah.
Get me 40 hours of billable a week.
Yeah.
That's all I care about.
Yeah.
Don't care about.
And the consistency of the workflow, and trying to, because that's the biggest thing with builders, right? Is that they have a project that runs for 6 months and then guess what happens? The next contract doesn't line up at the end of that 6 months. And then what do you do for 3 months while you're trying to chew your feet? You're pricing jobs, underpricing so you can win them.
Yep.
And then it's cash 22.
Yep.
So.
And the margin in our projects we've found is not on labor.
Yeah.
It's a material turnover.
Yeah.
You know, like you use electricians and plumbers, just for argument's sake, like electricians buy PowerPoints for $5 to $10 a PowerPoint. I don't know what their, you know, pricing structure is. Cabling and things like that. They are cheap items, right? But they can pay their guys, I don't know, I've been out of the game, that game for a bit, but like let's just say they're charging out, for argument's sake, at $100 an hour and they're paying their guy $50 an hour. Their margin is in their labor. So they only really, if you're using that sort of those maths, they're only needing to be billed out for 20 hours a week. Whereas with carpenters and that, it's not, the margins are just not really in it, what you're paying them and what you're charging out, right? So you need material turnover. And if you have a slow week or weeks, like that can burn into your margin pretty quickly.
That's what we found. Massively. 4 weeks, 6 guys.
Yeah. So we use all the software, Gantt charts, things like that, because we're chasing calendar efficiency as like our big thing.
Yeah.
We can, I'm happy to take on a, you know, a $1.8 million renovation, but I'm also happy to do a $30,000, $40,000,
$50,000 $100,000 if it picks it, if it fills it in. That's pretty much how we run our business models. Yep. We, you know, ideally project jobs, but I'll pick up a little reno in Paddington or I'll do some hourly rate to fill it in. Yep. But that's not what I'm chasing.
I chase
the certain aspect of work that I want.
Yep.
And then there's all this other stuff like market, we're not lucky in the sense. We're lean enough that we can still do industry rate work as well. So that is an aspect that I keep the door open at.
Yep.
And it, as everyone knows, you can walk out there tomorrow and go do that sort of shit.
Yeah, there's like insurance work. Guys,
there's no money to be made. No money to be made in it, but it keeps the guys busy and keeps the fucking lights on. But
we had to do insurance work during COVID. You know, a few of our projects.
That was one of the. That was the next thing I was going to ask you. Is like, how did that whole, you know, how did COVID go for you guys? Because obviously, for us, like as I said to you off camera before, not that that was the reason why I got out of the client game, but that was a massive moment in time where it was just like, ah, fuck, like it's too hard. Like, how did you guys manage that?
Pivot your business. Yeah. Right? We were fortunate enough that even though we're not really salesy, networky kind of guys, we had a contact that did a lot of insurance work.
Yeah.
And we got in on that for like 3 or 4 months because we had two projects lined up and the bank put the brakes on both of them. And putting on someone else's shirt and going to work, doing insurance work is pretty demoralizing.
You got to do what you got to do, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's right. Exactly right. And it's hard because it's not rewarding. Yeah. It's you're basically replacing stuff for what it was. And the client's like, cool, my insurance policy covers that. I'm getting what I wanted out of the situation. See you later.
Yeah.
You know, it's, you know, some guys are into it and good on them, you know. But for us, it was, So COVID hurt us from that level where we weren't making money, but at least we weren't losing money.
And you stayed in the game.
Stayed in the game. And that's how it's felt in the last little bit.
Yeah.
You know, in that period of COVID and a couple of years after and uncertainty and rising costs and things like that, it just felt like existing was a win.
Yep.
You moved away from what your books looked like and you thought, well, we're still trading. We've still got work lined up. We're still just existing. And, yeah, weird feeling of just, oh, well, I'm existing. Yeah. So we must be doing something right.
Yeah. That's it. Like, you know, for us as a business personally, for myself, like we're probably in the most dangerous spot at the moment in regards to growth and scale. But for me, like if you really get lot, because a lot of, you know, you see this shit on social media, people, you know your numbers and, you know, throw your head in the figures. And if you're not making this, you should be out of business. For me, I do that to a degree, but I feel like you can really get lost down a rabbit hole of self-doubt and forcing yourself to do something that isn't organic. So yes, I have a look at the P&Ls like everyone does in financials and checking jobs and all that sort of rest of it. I look at that as a whole, yeah, right? But for the most part, I just go off my gut. I go off, you know, how I physically can see the business going, yep, the attitude, the jobs, the client reviews. And if that all sort of accumulates to something good,
yeah,
I know that we're going in the right path, right? I know that something is at least working. It might not physically look like it on paper on the actual document. You know, it might not say point da 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 da, da, da that you're fucking plus whatever. Mm. But for the most part, it doesn't matter. As long as you're still in the game and yeah, you're still building something, at the end of the day,
yeah,
it'll come.
The big one is just understanding your operating costs.
Yeah.
Things like materials, and you know, you can get a set of plans and send them out to every Tom, Dick, and Harry to quote, like, so that you get an accurate sort of number on that. But you just got to make sure, and we've always sort of said, we don't take too many leaves from the money tree, essentially.
Yeah.
We don't overpay ourselves. In fact, we underpay ourselves.
Yeah.
Because it's, people go, oh, your money's trapped in the company, but it's not really. It is there if you need it.
Yeah.
But we always make sure we have more than enough.
Yeah.
And like I said, like early on, we have cash flowed our way from $500 to, you know, being a cash run business.
That's so what I mean. Like
you can't take a lot from it.
Mm.
You can't, because it fluctuates so hard. And yeah, and as you're growing too,
oh,
your cash flow is everything, because all your money is out in various projects, and you sort of, yeah, your P&L, you're looking at your P&L a bit and saying you're making money, and you think, well, I don't have much in the bank.
Yeah.
You know, where is all that money?
It swings the other way sometimes, yeah, and you're like, it's saying I'm making fucking nothing, but yet I got a fat bank account. Yeah. So it's like, yeah, that's one of those things. It's so hard. You can really get wrapped up in the numbers.
Yes, you can.
And you know, for us, like, you know, Bass time just went, you know, this podcast is coming out later, but Bass just went,
yeah,
fucking, we just got our biggest Bass bill to date, like, yep, fucking huge. Mm. Right? But I'm okay with it. I understand, money, you know, I understand taxes are taxes. Like, we don't owe any debt. We did the same thing.
Yep.
Right? Everyone talks about how you get growth. That's all you do, is you keep your fucking money in the business and yep, you feed that beast week on, week off, and every single week.
Ride those waves. When you're in a purple patch, don't go and buy your missus a Prado and a jet ski and then transfer the kids to private school. Just keep...
Oh.
We always look at it like, we always give ourselves... We review our pay annually.
Yeah.
On the first week of July.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter what kind, like, we reflect upon the year and go, okay, we did okay this year. Maybe we can give ourselves a little bit more.
Yeah.
We sort of forecast what we've got coming up and project in some way. But we don't just pay ourselves whatever we need based on that period in time.
Yeah.
It's very strict.
Yeah. Everyone still lives on a budget. Like, that's what everyone tends to forget as a business owner. They think, oh, he's all right, he can just do whatever he fucking wants. Bro, I still gotta save my money. I still got to be, you know, I'm still going to groceries complaining about how much shit is. Like, you're not living this fucking rock star lifestyle.
Say to people, business ownership is glamorized.
Yeah.
It is like, so glamorized. I remember being younger and seeing business owners and, you know, and I think, oh God, that would be amazing. Like, imagine being your own boss. It looks so much like.
Oi, and how much has social media now made it even more glamorized, right? Because when you first started out, I bet you, like, yeah, even when I started out, it wasn't such a big thing. It was in the background. It was there.
Yep.
But it wasn't like, well, it wasn't what it is now.
Powerful tool.
You jump on there now, fucking, you see every second dude, he's, I don't know how many people over in Europe right now, but fuck, every second person that I have on socials, yeah, they're all over in Europe,
yeah,
on a jet ski, yeah, doing something.
On a boat in Croatia or something.
You know what I mean? You're sitting here and you're like, oh, I just got a massive bass bill. Fuck, like, what am I doing? That's so wrong. Well,
when you think about it too, like, you know, a lot of the old guys will say, like, your best advertising was your Yellow Pages ad, right? Like, back in the day. Whereas now, there's so much more insight with social media. You only project what you want everybody to see too. You know, we do plenty of
And people will only see what they want to see. That's what I've learned as well with the content game, is that people will only, it doesn't matter what form of content you put out there. Obviously, if you're very controversial, you're going to get that thrash back, right? But for the most part, doesn't matter who you are. You're going to look at a form of content and you're only going to ever see what you want to see of that person, yeah. whether good, bad, right? Professional, yeah. unprofessional. Yeah. We've had guys say that our content's very professional. We've had guys say that we're not very professional. So at the end of the day, what I've learned anyway is like, it doesn't
matter.
You
happy.
Can't keep everyone happy, right?
No way.
You got to find what works
yeah.
for you.
Yeah.
You know, and it's one of those things. And that was going to be one of the questions I was going to ask you is like, you know, for you and Brock, obviously content from when you guys were doing decks and fucking handrails to what it is now is a massive, massive game. It's a massive leverage tool that you can use. Yeah. Is that something that, you know, you're working on the background? How valuable do you think that is? Do you think it's a good tool?
I think it's valuable. I think we've predominantly been a word of mouth business. Mm-hmm. But what that does is word of mouth, then they'll go and research and then they'll make that decision. Mm-hmm. So word of mouth gets you there. Like word of mouth gets your foot in the door.
Yeah.
But you have to back it up. And that's what we use the social media for, is not to oversell or anything like yep. that. It's just to sit in the marketplace and say, well, this is us. Again, like I said before, we're not salesy kind of guys.
Yep.
I can't walk into an architect firm and sit down and say, you know, we're great, you should give us a go. Like I can't, I just cringe at the thought of having to go and sell myself. Yep. I can't sit in someone's living room and say, look, we might not be the cheapest, but you should really go with us. We're amazing. Like yep. we're not salesy. It's more, this is us. If you want to work with us, great. If you don't, great. It's just as simple as that for us. But in improving the way that we go about social media is just part of our growth, yep. our brand. It just sits there. It does
change. It changes as well. And I feel like a lot of guys get wrapped up in the, oh, you know, I got to make sure that I'm posting this. It's got to look. It's got to. In 5 years' time, your content's going to be completely different to what it is now.
No one looks at your content and goes, oh, he was 2 months between posts. Yeah. No one cares that yeah. hard. It's yeah. just, it's a gallery of sorts. It's yeah. just, you know, you can bring a bit of the culture and yeah. the brand through in that too. It's not just about, look at this finished house. It's like, here's us out having fun, or here's yeah. us as a team celebrating success, or whatever that is.
Yeah.
We've just improved it to showcase what we can do.
Yeah.
That's the big thing for us. Like, look what we can do.
Yeah.
And look what we've done.
Yeah.
It's not anything more than that. And I say to people, I always leave advertising in my back pocket that yeah. if I really need something, like a contract falls through or something, or the final funding doesn't come through, we can advertise and utilize it a bit more.
Mm.
That's like our backstop.
Yeah.
Advertising on social media is like my backstop.
Yeah.
Like if I need to fill the calendar or I'm projecting or something falls over,
yeah.
then yeah, that I will definitely utilize it.
Yeah.
But at the moment it just sort of sits there and backs up.
Yeah. How does Brock feel about social media? And
Not a fan.
We're
a bit more old school where
yeah.
we thought when we entered this business that your work spoke for itself.
Yeah.
You just do good work, you'll get more work.
Mm.
So old school, right?
Yeah.
And that's what we were saying before yeah. around the work and the sell. And so for years we were like, well, we're churning out good work. Like, why does that guy who doesn't paint the ends on his cuts on balustrade or stops around windows, how come he gets all this awesome work? Like, we were tearing the work apart. Mm. And it's like, that's because he's paying people to develop videos and brands and all this beyond. It's like, it's just this other realm outside of your trade. So he's more, you know, head down, bum up. I'll just do my job. It doesn't get caught up in anything. Yeah. Like he just wants to hang out with the boys and sling tools and have fun. And that's good. Like, and that's his happy place and that's his sweet spot. And I'm off coordinating all the other stuff.
Yeah. So for me, I look at content as like a bit of a live storyboard, because you can jump on someone's page and you can really get a feel, like, because the way that I look at it is no one really, like, you got websites and stuff, right? Say for instance, you go to a client's house, the contract value is about $1 million for this reno that they're looking to do, right? They're about 35 to 45 years old. They got a few kids. Guaranteed they're going to be on they're going to be on Instagram and Facebook.
Yeah.
In reality, right? If I could, out of 10 people, maybe one of them isn't. But for the most part, nearly all of them are.
Yeah.
So what, in reality, this is what I found anyway, for a personal journey with myself, what I found to happen is that, yes, you would either get the word of mouth, either through referral or whoever, that would get you in the door.
Mm-hmm.
You would then sell yourself with the tender or the quote or whatever. You would then sell that. They would then take that. Or if they already had your details, guess what they would have already done? They would have jumped on your Facebook or your Instagram and they would have had a look at you.
Yeah.
Right. So for someone like myself that was young in the game, that didn't have much, that was very much a thing that I leaned on and something that I lean on now, and it's paying dividends now. But it's almost like a reference point, because obviously you can dress your website to whatever you want,
yeah,
but who updates their website every day? No one, right? You put on your key projects. You might have 6 or 7 or 8 projects that you might put on there. You might finish one, as you said, you might finish one project a year.
Yeah.
But the social media aspect is a running timeline, right? So you every week, every day, whatever it is, it's running, it's there. So for us, what we do is we pump, you know, the things that we want people to see, the culture of our company. You know, why would you pick Johnny over us?
Yeah.
We're the same price, but who do you feel more happy giving your money to? Someone that puts their money back into their team, that has a good culture, they showcase it, they look happy. Fuck. That's one of those things. I look at it from their point of view, not my point of view. I look at what I would do if I had $1 million, what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much how I look at it. So, but then
everybody's different, right?
So, yeah.
And it's hard to preempt.
That's what I mean. So you're dealing with, sometimes you deal with a 60-year-old that's fully against it. Social media. I don't want anything to do with it. Yeah. So it is very different. And
I think you just have to make sure that what you're putting out into the world is you, it's authentic, and then you can back that up.
Yep.
And it all just correlates. That's it.
And the same thing is obviously the work. The workmanship, it's the whole thing. And that's what I say. I screw it into the guys as well.
Yeah.
Like, I can build this brand and build the content out as good as we want or as big as we want.
Yeah.
But nothing is going to stand on the foundation of the work that we do, the quality that we do on site.
No one wants to drive around all day. You know, I say, we've got a few sub trades that tend to do this, but drive around with your fire extinguisher all day putting out fires.
Yeah.
Like, no one wants to run a business like that. It's not enjoyable.
All right. What do we got? Oh, this has been good. Jeez, time went by.
Yeah, that's gone very quick.
All right. So we'll keep going. We've got a few more questions.
Yeah,
sure. I've only really got, you know, a handful more, and then we've got a fire round of questions that I'm going to ask you.
Okay.
But yeah, basically tell us where's Old Brock going at the moment? Like, what are you guys doing? What's the plan? Have you got any exciting things coming up? Where are you guys with team? And all that sort of stuff.
We've got some good things coming up. I think that's sort of hard sometimes too, when all you're putting out into the world is where you almost were.
Yeah.
You know, because you and I can forecast, you can see what's coming. You're sort of like 6-12 months in advance of what's in the pipeline, but you can't tell the world about it yet. So we had a couple of people leave, and much like growth, like we've sort of grown, sat, and then we've actually gone back a bit and sat, and then we're like, okay, maybe we're ready to go again.
Yeah.
So we've just taken on a project that we got on a tender roll with an architect firm, because our previous client basically hassled them and said, you need to come and see the work, you need to meet these guys.
Yeah.
Like I was saying before, we're sort of starting to get in the door with a few designers and architects, which is really nice.
Yeah.
We've got a job kicking off. Its contract value is nearly double of our previous sort of value. We've got some good work coming up that we've finished and we're waiting to shoot and things like that.
Yeah.
But we'd like to add to the team.
Yeah.
Apprentices and really invest in the people that we've got.
Yeah.
Because we want to build what we say is like a strong bucket to handle. You know, a few guys have buckets, you know, and they take on a whole bunch of work and they scramble and they just grab whoever they can to get it done.
I
call them like leaking buckets. They're just trying to fill the holes in the bucket with whoever the hell they can get to do the job.
Oh.
Whereas we're very much like build a strong bucket.
Yeah.
You
go through phases though, right?
Yeah.
Like same as us. Like prime example, we've gone from 16... 4, 5, 6, 7, 10, fucking right back down to 5, back up again. So it's just one of those things. And like it's not a direct graph.
That's the other, you know, I said to someone recently, like, oh, wouldn't it be good to just enter a financial year and know roughly what you're going to do a year and roughly what you're going to make a week? And he just sort of laughed and went, you're kidding yourself. Yeah. And I thought, yeah, I know, it's construction. But we've, same. We're trying to find the sweet spot, like, how do we need to be top heavy? Well, we don't. But these are all the things you got to figure out. Am I top heavy? Have I got not enough in the top end? Yeah. Have I got the right team? Have we got the right workflow? Have we got the right number of people? For us, it all comes down to what you think success is, right?
Yeah.
Like success to some guys is revenue. It's projects. For us, we don't want a lot from it. We just want to live comfortably, set ourselves up, do good work and enjoy it.
Yeah.
Train young guys to be good men and good carpenters.
Yeah.
And just have fun along the way.
Yeah.
We've got some good stuff coming up. Lots of variation too, $1.8 million renovation, a $600,000 renovation, a $1 million renovation, a $40,000 bathroom, and I'm not saying those numbers in a bragging way, just more that's the variance of what we do and we're just, as long as we're having fun and making money.
But that's the thing, isn't it? It's not about the mansion and the Lambos, right? It comes down, like for me, I'm on the same sort of wavelength. Like for me, it's all lifestyle.
Yeah.
I feel like if you said to me, listen, you can take, I give you a Lambo and a house on the water, but you got to do X, Y, and Z. Or I give you a $7,000 ute, but you get to live the life that you want, when you want, how you want. You get to do what you want.
Grow up.
Exactly. For me, that's it. That's all I need. Obviously, my wife would be the first one to say that he's never fucking content with anything that he does. But it's not that
my business partner says that.
Yeah, I don't think it's one of those things that I'm never content. I think. I always want to strive for more.
Well, you're looking for opportunity.
I'm looking for opportunity, and I'm a strong believer in that. If you're not growing, you're going backwards. Whether it doesn't have to be growth in regards to the, for us anyway, we've had massive growth with the business, but it doesn't have to be growth in regards to numbers or the rev,
right? It could be the brand,
personal,
could be the team, it could be the kind of work you're doing. Yeah. The other thing too that that people have to remember or remember is that this is one of the few jobs where you can make money at home and at work.
Mm.
And so that's where we're going to go too. Like we want to move into doing our own stuff as well.
Yeah.
And I am. I've starting that process on my own house, engaging an architect and doing our own projects as well. Utilize that. Our guys have bought houses and we've let them buy materials and things on the account and because we just want everyone to get ahead. And make it. There's some good stuff coming up. I think we're heading in the right direction. We're in a place that we want to be in.
Yep.
And now it's just about letting go of all those imposter syndromes and anxieties and things that you face.
Yeah.
And just enjoying it now.
Yeah. And I think you can really, for the young guys that are listening anyway, you can really get trapped in, comparing yourself to other people and their journey and stuff like that. At the end of the day, as you guys have already listened to Oliver's journey, my journey, everyone's on their own thing. There
just
is
don't
no,
rush it.
Enjoy.
Just don't rush
enjoy
it.
Enjoy the ride.
And it'll come to you.
Yeah.
I'm taking my mother's own advice. I'm giving my mother's own advice that I'm not taking, but she always says to me, just slow down.
Yeah.
And just enjoy it and it will come to you. And I'm so looking ahead like, oh, we could be here, we could be here, but just stop. It will come to you.
Yeah.
And, even from someone like myself who came from no real background, had no real contacts, you just got to keep chipping away at it.
Yeah, you just keep chipping away.
And you'll get there.
Yeah, 100%.
Yep.
And, you pick and choose how you want to basically live your life and mold the business to suit you.
Yeah.
Don't
get trapped in your own business. That's not a good place to be.
Yeah, exactly. The business should never own you. You should own the business.
Correct.
Totally. But, yeah, so, all right. Yep. Well, I got a few fire round questions for you.
Okay.
Don't worry, it's not one of those things where you need to answer in 5 seconds. You can do your best. They're very straight. They're not personal or anything like that. They're just very industry related questions, and you can obviously, from your experience, just answer in the best that you can. So I'm gonna get them going.
Yep.
All right. So, what is the most rewarding project you've ever worked on thus far? Rewarding as in it could be financially or something that you felt like that you actually look back on now and you're like, that is like, for me, I've got some, but like for you, like what is probably one project that you look at and you're like,
We did a new build for my brother in Coolum Beach and it has a lot of like insulation.
Yeah.
A lot of passive, like an interpretation of passive in it. And for me to be able to go in that direction and be able to execute that and
do that.
Like insulation wrap and reticulation movement and all these sorts of things.
That was like a monumental moment. Like you were like, oh, this is sick. Yeah.
And it was our first proper new build too.
Yeah.
So that was like
That's like a pivotal one for you.
Yeah.
Sick. Yep. All right. How do you stay up to date with industry trends and, you know, innovations and stuff? Social media?
Talk to your reps.
Yep.
Talk to people in the industry. Keep your contacts.
Yep.
And usually designers and architects will come to you with things that are changing and emerging.
Yeah.
But also you got to be across, you know, codes and things like that as well. So for like a lot of your smaller stuff, like we draw all of our kitchens and bathrooms in-house.
Yep.
So you've got to make sure you're on top of all of that too when you're designing things. But social media, you know, Pinterest, things like that are the way to go.
All right. What's your go-to productivity hack for your busy days? Because obviously you're a busy man. Everyone's got their own schedule, even though for the boys that are probably listening on you, like, he's never busy. He's just in the office. But everyone is busy. Like, what's probably some of the biggest hacks for you? Getting up early, calendars. Like, how do you?
Yeah.
What's your biggest one?
Lists. Yeah. Because for me,
do you do a daily list? Do you do it in the morning or the night?
I do it the day before, and I leave it on my desk so that when I arrive in the morning, it's there.
Yeah.
And in my head, the list, whether it's on paper or on your phone.
Yeah.
It takes the responsibility of it being locked in here, and it's the paper's responsibility now. That's how I look at it.
Yep.
So there's so many things buzzing around in your head.
Mm-hmm.
The moment it departs my head and it's on the paper, in my mind, it's the paper's problem.
Love that. Mm. Yeah, love that. I use Google Calendar. I have like every day, like, because Linda's got access to my calendar as well, but every day I've got like just a thing that says my name, and then in that is all my things. And I like do it every like 3 days. I'll do like 3 days worth of what I want to do. Yeah. Some weeks it's fucking mumbo jumbo. No, I'm like dragging shit back and I'm like, I didn't get this done. But eventually I usually try to plan by the end of the week. I try to get most of it done. So yeah, that's so good.
And
that's
I think you have to be kind to yourself too. Some days you're going to be on the ball and some days it's just going to be a bit much. So you don't get sick. Be so hard on yourself.
Yeah, yeah.
If some days or some weeks you're super productive and other weeks not as much.
All right. What would be some advice that you would give someone starting out a construction business today? Right. So meaning, you know, what would be some key advice that you would give them? You know, would that be the slowing down aspect? Would it be, you know,
I think before you make the jump.
Yeah.
Before you make the jump, just get your contacts. Get some contacts.
Yeah.
You know, plan for that. You know, if you're working, depending on who you're working with, you know, make sure you take the time to talk to the clients, build rapport with the clients on your own. And the designers on the jobs, and show just a level of interest, and have good contacts. Have good contacts. Chat to mentors. Get some mentors on your side. I never really had them. I had mentors in other businesses, but if you can find people that are happy to lend an ear, and like I'm always happy to lend an ear to people because it is tough. It is really tough. It's a lot tougher than I thought. I think back, you know, when we went into business, I was just ignorant. Really, to be honest, in a nice way. Like I just was so like, nah, we'll be fine. Like we've got this, you know. So get good people around you that are going to support you and give you guidance and because like we've said, it is running a business is so far away from the trade.
Yeah.
So just immerse yourself in your current company as well. Like and almost start looking at it as if it's your own and start sort of emulating what your boss is doing and taking the responsibility because it's like a trial run in the comfort of your current employment.
Yeah, no, for sure. All right. I'm going to change that question up on you because I got because you're one of the few people that have come in here that has had a successful experience in regards to business partnership.
All right. Yeah.
So Nick's going to cut that conversation out. But what I'm going to do is, so what are some advice that you can give someone? Because obviously there's people out there that have got friends and family and people that want to get into business with partners, right? What's some advice that you can give for that? Because obviously the one that you've got with Brock is successful, I believe. Anyway, looking from the outside it's successful, right? You guys have built what you've built. You've still got a good relationship. What's some advice that you can give going into that? Is it setting things up initially, understanding the roles and tasks and the early on in the piece, contractually putting something in place? Is it, how does that all work out?
We've never really had a contract. We've sort of just, the roles have just developed.
Yeah.
But what I'd say is go into business with someone that you respect and appreciate their skill set and what they can bring to that business partnership.
Yeah.
I think one of the things that makes us a little different is that we're not just two builders essentially.
Mm-hmm.
I let him do the building and I take care of operating the company.
Yeah.
So, which is probably a unique situation to be in, but
is that something, sorry to interrupt, but is that something that you established right at the start, like when you're in your apprenticeship phase?
Yeah, pretty well.
It is like something that you guys spoke about while you were still swinging a hammer going, listen, like when we're, you know, I can see myself going this way. Yeah. Can you see yourself going that way? Like, does he ever, you know, and this is some honest, this is some honest questions that I've got as well. Like, is there any points that like, does he ever look at you like on the hot days when he's slinging his ass out and it's 50 degrees and it's super hot and you're sitting in the office. Does he ever get soft?
In my car with an almond croissant and a nice long black.
You know what I mean? Like,
what have you guys been up to?
You know what I mean? Like, is there any, like, how do you guys actually battle that? Like,
I think because we respect each other.
Yeah.
And I trust him with anything.
Yeah.
Like, I trust that man more than my partner probably, because it's like, you have to, like, people, you know, and probably say, and I've heard it before, you know, business partnerships are like marriage without sex.
Literally.
And you have to respect each other. And yeah, sure. There might be weeks where he's framing in 35 degree heat. And then there's weeks where he's managing trades and doing some arcs and skirts and fit outs at the back end of a project. And I'm, you know, balls deep in like four different proposals that I've got to get out for the end of the month. It's just about knowing that there's going to be ebbs and flows.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, we both respect what we can bring and it's never a competition and everything is always 50-50.
Okay. That's good.
Well, we try to make it 50-50.
Yeah. That's so good. Like, and I feel like for the guys that are listening anyway, I feel like that is probably like, obviously your success story is, you know, it doesn't happen all the time. You hear about all the dramas that people have, not even just with partnerships, but even their partners. So they're like, you know, their marriage partners and stuff going down that path. Like, you know, personally, I don't run that model. But I've always
tried to keep partners out of that
because
those relationships are more important than the business.
Yeah. Like that's a whole nother conversation. You know what I mean? Like that,
You've got to just trust them, respect them, and share the common goal of what success is and what you both want to get out of it.
It's so good. So I know we're coming to the end of it, but how did you guys actually meet again? How did you and Oliver actually meet? You and Brock. Sorry, how did you guys actually meet?
So he was best friends with my cousin.
Yeah,
and I was quite close to my cousin.
Yeah,
so we met when we were like 4 or 5.
Oh, okay. 5 or 6. Oh, okay. So you guys are actually,
We've sort of maintained contact throughout the years. And then he moved into, he was originally doing cold room building and then he got out of that and did his trade.
Yeah.
And then when I bought my house, we always maintained contact, seeing each other at family events and things like that through the cousin.
Yeah.
And then when we renovated our house together, his skill set. I was just in awe of his skill set, and I thought we originally started Old Brock Projects just quicks on it because we wanted to flip houses, and I was going to be the person who designed them or come up with the design. He was going to help me execute it, and I think we just carried that philosophy into the business, where he was going to be the person who pulled it together, and I'd be working with him to make it something great.
Yeah, that's so good. Yeah, I'm so happy for you guys, like, to get for that relationship anyway, to have that trust, because like some people work with their marriage partners and they don't even have that relationship, and I feel like that is, you know, to have that clear cut in the sand where he understands that what you're doing is just as important as you understand that what he's doing
well,
is
you're
just
not
as
arguing over the same piece of turf.
Yeah,
so I don't go into his job site and say, oh, I wouldn't have put that beam in that way, and I would have packed it out, or I would have done this,
and he doesn't come into
the office and say, oh, the bookkeeping or that proposal, there's a couple of spelling mistakes in the second paragraph. Like, we don't do that.
Yeah.
We stay in our lane, essentially, on the highway, and we're just driving alongside.
Yeah. All right. Well, that was it. That was it. So Nick's going to have fun with that one.
Yeah, there's some random thing in there.
No, that was good. All right. Well,
yeah.
I hope you guys got some insight into what happens on site with Oliver and Albrock Projects. And Oliver, thank you for coming on.
Oh, thanks for the opportunity.
It was a really good conversation. We probably ran over on time, but we could sit here for hours and hours and talk about everything. So thank you again for coming on. Hey guys, thanks for listening to this week's episode. If something hit home for you, it would mean the absolute world to us if you could like and share this podcast with someone else that would benefit from it.
Tune into next week's episode, as this will be one that you don't want to miss.